taking into account the various methods that were being used in the industry, and it actually was several years before a consensus on the testing procedures was reached and the test methods published. And in the meantime, the World War II had started in 1939, and the military became more and more conscious of the fact that plastics were going to be a major factor in providing materiel for their use, and they became somewhat concerned that that they had to have methods of test that were standardized, so that the information that they would be getting from the various laboratories would be comparable. this concerned particularly the Air Corps, and J.B. Johnson, who was head of the materials group at Wright Field, called a conference to try to get agreement by the industry representatives on methods of test for the fundamental, the fundamental mechanical properties of plastics. It was a very interesting meeting, and it was held July the 8th, 1941, and we, for some reason, I seem to have served as the fellow that was responsible for writing up what had been agreed upon, and my notes say this graph was prepared by G.M. Klein, National Beer Standards, August 22nd, 1941, and it summarized the testing conditions and the testing procedures for some 19 items. First, having to do with conditioning and testing, and the speed of testing, and then there were 17 other specific types of tests that were of interest, particularly to the Air Corps with respect to the use of plastics. These methods, of course, were in large part in agreement with what ASTM Committee D20 was talking about in their sessions, but as I said previously, the work in the ASTM committee was proceeding slowly, and Wright Field felt that it could no longer wait for those methods to be agreed upon and published. But that I remember that conference at Wright Field very well because of the although we didn't get into the war until about 5 months later. This meeting was very important with respect to preparing the way for information that the military services could use with some degree of reliability for the many applications which plastics were used for during the war period.
Did your section really expand during the war, the organic plastics section?
Yes, of course. When we started out in 36, the section was organized in January of 36. and it consisted of Ben Axelrod and myself. In other words, one chief and one Indian. And when the war ended in 1945, there were 40 of us in the plastic section that were doing all of the major testing for all of the military services. Their representatives came out to the Bureau to observe that they sent items that had been prepared for them by the various plastics firms and molders, and the military groups sent those products to the Bureau standards to be tested, and their representatives personally came out and witnessed the tests, and it required some expansion to the approximately 40 personnel. I had very good connections with the University of Maryland, having taken my PhD degree there, and of course qualified personnel were difficult to find during that war period, because every trained technical person could readily find employment. And I knew the Dean of Women at the University of Maryland, and many of the girls that had some technical training in the course of their studies at the University of Maryland wound up in the plastic section at the National Bureau of Standards, doing very capable work in handling these miscellaneous tests. And the plastic section at the Bureau of Standards became known as Dr. Klein's finishing school. But as I say, we were fortunate to have such an excellent source of qualified personnel available right next door.
I guess we've talked a little bit about your involvement with aeronautics during World War II. But what about the trip to England that you made? I think it was in 1942.
Yeah. Can I discuss the formation of the American Chemical Society activities in plastics before we go
sure.
into
that's,
that?
That's fine.
Because it occurred the same year, you see. The ASDN Committee D20 was formed in 37, as I've just said. And actually, it was during the same period of 1936-37 that the plastics activity in the American Chemical Society took place. We had a meeting of individuals that were interested in working on plastics at a meeting at Chapel Hill. On April 12th, 1937, it was there that the agreement was reached that there should be formed a organic plastics section of the Division of Paint and Varnish Chemistry. And I have in my files the signatures of some, a rather long list of individuals who signed the petition to form this organic plastic section. As I go down the list, all of the leading firms in the plastics industry had their representatives signed here. Arthur Doolittle of Carbide & Carbon, who was very well known for his work on plasticizers, Dr. Bakerlund, who needs no introduction, also signed that petition. Roy Keenly, well, as I say, all of the major technical personnel. DeLilio from General Electric, well, that name will be familiar to many people. And Mindel and Dittmar from DuPont. I could go on and on. I have the complete list and the original signatures of those individuals. So this resulted in 1937 that the organic plastics section was organized as a section of the Division of Paint and Varnish. In 1938, Herman Brusen, who I've mentioned before here today, was the chairman. Then Dittmar of DuPont in 1939, and Pat Note of General Electric in 1940. That group became known finally as the Organic Plastics Group rather than section, probably because the confusion with I can't think at the moment. Anyway, ultimately, the section was incorporated into the division of paint and varnish chemistry and became known as the Organic Coatings and Plastics Division, with alternating in chairmanships of the division, first from the protective coating side and then from the plastic side. Now, today it seems unbelievable that the title was not changed at the time of the first formation, but even in 37, the protective coatings industry industrially was a much larger component than the synthetic resins side of the picture, and it's one of those things that post-mortem it would have been much more logical to have a broader title.
Right.
The as you all know, this ultimately the plastics industry, as it grew and grew, finally outgrew the protective coating side of the picture and became a separate division of the American Chemical Society by itself. And then somewhat later, the interest in polymer, in the fundamentals of polymer chemistry, became such that the pure side and the applied side separated into two different divisions.
When did that take place, roughly?
Well, I'd have to look at the records.
Would that be in the 50s sometime?
Yes, I'd have to. Actually that occurred in the late 50s, late 50s or early 60s. I think records of that available, but I just don't remember the exact date. But of course today they've changed the name of the applied side again within the last couple of years, but those two divisions now, the polymer chemistry division and the applied polymer chemistry division, are two of the largest divisions in the American Chemical Society, as they should be.
Was there, just to get away a little bit from the wartime period, was there ever a tension at the Bureau of Standards? We talked about this in the car a little bit, but was there ever a tension at the Bureau of Standards between the pure and applied sides? And if how could you trace that out?
Well, a good deal of the work at the Bureau of Standards, at least 50% of the work, particularly in our area, in the area of organic materials, and also in the inorganic field, was obviously, well, maybe not obviously, but was on the more practical side. And 50% or more of the work actually was supported by funds transferred from other government agencies.
Mm-hmm.
And the emphasis during the 40s and up until early 50s was very much on the applied side. Then after, in the late 40s, the emphasis, the laboratories in industry were expanding, the laboratories in universities were expanding, the plastics laboratories, they were undertaking in the university laboratories much more of the pure science research, and the new director of the Bureau came in at about that time, 1950, Dr. Condon, felt that that the emphasis in the Bureau's approach should be less on the applied side and much more on work in the field of the fundamental chemistry and physics of materials. And one of the first duties I had after I became chief of the division was to reorganize the work of the division to stress the fundamental side, and we abolished the division was renamed the Polymer Division. This was in the about the middle 50s, and the materials sections, textiles, paper, leather, rubber, plastics were abolished, and new sections were organized in terms of research on the fundamental properties of polymers. It was a logical transition because more and more of the applied side research was being done in either in the commercial laboratories mm-hmm. themselves or in the universities under the sponsorship with the funds being supplied by industry on sponsored projects. And it was an easy, relatively easy transformation. The one thing that troubled me at the time was the that in some of the divisions new division chiefs lost sight of the fact that, after all, we were the National Bureau of Standards and that we had the primary responsibility for developing, with the cooperation of industry, standards for, particularly standards for testing methods and also for standards for materials and products to a lesser degree.
Performance standards.
Performance standards, yes.
Because I was thinking, I mean, I have the date I have here for the reorganization is 1951. Does that sound?
Well, that was the year I was appointed chief of the polymers of the Division of Organic and Fibrous Materials, as it was known then. And I don't remember the exact year in which it became the polymer division, but the reorganization became my responsibility. On the question of standards, I even had at the had individuals who were in some of the other divisions tell me that their division chiefs did not encourage them to participate in the work of the ASTM, or well, the ASTM, of course, was the primary organization, private organization, non-governmental organization for preparing standards, and that they were told if they wanted to participate in the ASTM, the work of ASTM committees, it would be on their own time and at their own expense. And this, I felt, was we're losing sight of the fact that we had equal responsibility for continuing at least a reasonable proportion of our work cooperating with ASTM in the development of standards and specifications. And we had regular meetings of the division chiefs in which we were called upon to report, give an up-to-date report on the activities of our division. And I would go through the various, have the various section chiefs report on their progress in studying the fundamental properties of plastics, mechanical, optical, permanence, and so forth, and the chemistry in particular. Dr. Wall Dr. Wall and his colleagues were doing outstanding original research in the field of polymerization of polymers, to produce polymers, and then in conclusion, I would take up the last half hour of these, I think, about 2 hour sessions describing our work in the fields of standards, both ASTM standards and international standards under the aegis of the International Standardization Organization in Geneva. And one of my more frank individuals, Dr. McIntyre of the group working under Dr. Wall, told me that he could see my eyes light up when I got to that portion of the agenda and started reporting on the work on standards. And but Dr. Aston, who succeeded Dr. Condon, of course, as director of the Bureau, and inherited this change in emphasis, would smoke his pipe at these sessions where we, as division chiefs, told what we were doing. And as I said in preparing a report on my years, my career at the National Bureau of Standards, I said he never uttered a discouraging word during the half hour I talked about standards. So I think, well, I know, he was a very personal friend, that that he certainly approved of the continued activity in those both national and international standardization activities.
Mm-hmm. Well, from reading through a lot of articles in Modern Plastics in that period, the industry itself was very concerned about, or at least the journal was very concerned about, the lack of standardization among the industry, weren't they? I mean, there was a big hue and cry about substandard materials and materials being used for purposes other than what they were intended for, and labeling problems, and
yes,
getting across the nature of plastics, of various plastics, to the consumers.
And yes, there in the early stages of the development and use of plastics, there were, as might be expected, some misapplications of the materials, and of course the question of flammability and of possible hazardous volatile materials or combustion products being formed from the plastic materials, and we did a great deal in the plastic section working on the mechanisms of degradation of plastics, both through natural weathering and aging, as well as under combustion conditions. And we published many reports in this area. I remember one thing that stood out. We made a particular study of the combustion of polyvinyl chloride, and proved very conclusively that in the process of combustion of PVC, there was never any vinyl chloride formed during the combustion of that resin. And this was very important because vinyl chloride had been proved to be a carcinogenic material, and in the chemical plants it was very necessary to keep to a very minimum the amount of vinyl chloride that to which the workers would be exposed. So it was equally important that there be some positive evidence that in a fire there would be no vinyl chloride formed as a result of the combustion.
When did these studies take place?
That was in the late 50s and early 60s.
Let's talk about your work during World War II now. I'm especially interested in your visits to England and your three-month tour in Germany. And I'm curious as to exactly what kinds of things you did in England. I guess that was in 1942.
Yes, at the invitation of the British Ministry of Supply and the Admiralty, they requested that the War Department send over to the UK a representative to discuss the work that was being done in the United States on plastic materials, and to also be shown the activities that were being done in the United Kingdom on using plastics in war. Of course, they entered the war in 1939, and we were 2 years behind them, and they had already, by August of 1942, had done very substantial work in converting the plastics into material that was needed for the armed services. I spent approximately a month there. It was my first trip in an airplane, and it was I went over in one of the flying boats of the American Export Line. We took off from the East River in New York